The Lone Grave. On the sloping lawn of a children's playground in Harrodsburg, Kentucky, stand strange reminders of an earlier day. One of these is an octagonal spring house where, more than 100 years ago, aristocratic southern gentlemen and ladies gathered to take the waters, which were guaranteed to be beneficial to the general health. The other, only a few yards away, is a grave now surrounded by a white picket fence. A white marker beside it reads, "Unknown. Hallowed and hushed be the place of the dead. Step softly, bow head." When the body of the beautiful girl who lies here was lowered into the ground, the impressive funeral ceremonies took place against the background of an entrance to an enormous inn. 8 white pillars rose from the floor of its veranda to carved capitals beneath its roof. This was Harrodsburg Springs Hotel in the Saratoga of the South, gayest of all Kentucky resorts. To it came the proudest and richest of southern families, the Breckinridges, the Morgans, the Rowans, the Poignards, the Buchanans. The great Senator Henry Clay was an occasional visitor, and once the hearts of southern belles and their mamas beat faster for the presence of the charming and eligible young Englishman, Frederick Peel, son of the renowned Sir Robert. There is no hotel on the grounds now. The famous dances held in the great ballroom to the music of a 3-piece slave orchestra are remembered only in the diaries of patrons long dead. There is not even much comment in Harrodsburg about the lone grave beside the spring house. "She was the girl who danced herself to death," is the usual answer to the inquiring tourist who happens upon the little park. There are many versions of the story of this girl, and at least one narrative of a strange modern aftermath. Some say she came by Kentucky River packet and was driven from the Harrodsburg landing through the impressive lion gate of the grounds in the hotel carryall. Others tell that she came in her own carriage, driven by a slave who immediately turned his team about and was not seen again. There are no disagreements, however, as to the impression she made in the ballroom that night. Among all the beauties attending, there was no girl so distinctive, so perfect a dancer, so fascinating in manner. Though it was obvious that she was pleased with the attentions of the many gentlemen, though she smiled vivaciously and talked animatedly, there was a pathos in her eyes that enhanced her loveliness. During an intermission between the dances, she strolled on the spacious lawn in the starlight, surrounded by a half dozen of her most ardent admirers. She stopped beneath the foliage of a widespread locust tree and suddenly became sad and pensive. "I've been happy here," she said. "If I were to die, I could wish for nothing better than to be buried at this spot." When she and her companions returned to the ballroom, the music of the slave orchestra was gayer and quicker than ever. Dance followed dance, and the girl seemed never to miss a step. Her curls bobbed about her oval face, and her little feet were swift on the shining floor. Suddenly, when the ball was at its merriest, there was a cry. The girl had sunk to the floor. Her features had become still. Her eyes were closed. "She's fainted," said someone. But the noted doctor who knelt at her side looked dazed with surprise, then shook his head sorrowfully. "She is dead," he said. After the guests had returned to their rooms, Dr. Graham, who owned the hotel, and his staff sought to discover who the girl was and whence she came. To their consternation, they found that although she had stopped at the desk ostensibly to sign the register, she had written no name or address therein. Frantically, they questioned the gentleman who had danced with her and the guests who had conversed with her. All agreed that she had been evasive in answering queries about her name and her home. One gentleman said that he understood that she came from Tennessee. Another said that she had spoken of life in New Orleans. Faced with the realization that they could find out nothing about the dead girl, they arranged a funeral service. The gentleman who had walked with her beneath the stars remembered the wish that she had spoken under the locust tree. There her grave was dug by the black musicians who had played for her dancing. All the fashionable guests of the big hotel gathered about it as the nameless corpse was laid to rest. A distinguished prelate said a few solemn words, and then all moved away, believing that the story of the lone grave was completed. So romantic and sad a tale, however, is not likely to come to a decisive end. Years have gone by, and sometimes in their passage, strange narratives have plagued the minds of those who have interested themselves in the story of the girl who danced herself to death. Once a late homecomer, taking the shortest way to his front door, followed a path through the park that led him between the spring house and the grave. Near the entrance to the spring house, he thought he saw a beautiful girl in a white ball gown, standing as if waiting for her escort. As he approached, she saw him and advanced toward him, her left hand held out in an appealing gesture. Her lips moved rapidly, and he realized that she was speaking to him earnestly, though he could hear no sound. A memory of the dead girl's story came into his mind, and terror-stricken, he raced from the park. Other passers-by have told similar stories, which vary little in their major element. The girl was dressed in white, she was apparently in distress, and she was speaking earnestly. I suppose I would not have come upon this story at all had it not been for the fact that an old friend of mine, now living in retirement in New Orleans, was once an antique dealer and had combed the district around Harrodsburg in the effort to purchase valuable old Kentucky furniture. A few years ago, he came into possession of a handsome mahogany and curly maple secretary, which contained piles of old papers considered worthless by a previous owner. He asked me to go over them in the hopes of finding material of historic interest, but I found only one page I treasured, and this was more of psychic than historical value. It read as follows. I write this down for what it is worth, and even at best this is nothing. I am an old lady and almost stone deaf, but my eyes are better than those of most people of my age. Because of my infirmity, I once took a course in lip reading at the School for the Deaf in Hartford, Connecticut. 3 nights ago, I found it difficult to sleep and went for a walk down by the old spring house. As I passed it, I saw a girl in full white evening dress standing beside the entrance. When she saw me, she came quickly toward me and placed her left hand on my right forearm in an appealing gesture. Then she began to speak, and I could not hear her voice. I could read from her lips, however, what she was saying. I ask your pardon, dear lady, for interrupting your stroll, but I am in great distress. I have of late been subject to strange losses of memory. I left the ball at the hotel a few moments ago, and I cannot recall the way back. I am frightened, too, because it seems that I can remember nothing more, not even my own name. I was touched by the girl's appeal, for she was very beautiful and very pitiful, and I said, if you'll come home with me, I will try to find your parents for you, my dear. There is no hotel near here, and there has not been a ball in Harrodsburg in a long time. She looked at me strangely and then burst into tears. Turning swiftly, she ran toward the spring house and vanished inside the entrance. I went inside to look for her, but she was not there. This, to the best of my memory and belief, is what happened to me 3 nights ago when I went for a walk about midnight. I do not believe in ghosts, but this was so strange a happenstance that I have decided to make a record of it. The page on which this communication was written was unsigned.